And almost every week, some of our people were beaten very badly. Some of our people were killed. Many of our people, as you know, were assassinated. And these were not the famous people that all of us know who were assassinated. These were, you know, ordinary people who were working to change the Deep South because we loved it. We loved it because it was our home. And so I came along eager to join this battle to reclaim a place that actually disenfranchised me, my parents, my grandparents. And one of the things that I realized was that I had to, in order to really face the horror of the South, the fear of the South, in order to face it, I had to go actually by myself to confront the very heart of it. And at that time, the very heart of the Deep South was Mississippi. And so I went to Mississippi when I actually could have gone to Paris. I had gotten some money, I could have gone to Paris. I could have been dealing with the very arrogant French people who tell you, you better speak the French right. But I decided to go to Mississippi where the black people still speak slowly and still look at you in the eye when they speak to you and still care about you. And I was actually living there and working there in the movement when Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated. This was one of the deep, dark nights of the soul. Very, 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 very difficult to bear. And yet, because he believed that a better world was possible, and he in fact had told us, he had told all of us from Georgia, Mississippi, Alabama, Louisiana, all the people from the Deep South, he had told us, stop running. Stop running from your home. Don't budge. Stay where you are. And if you have left your home, go back to your home. And this was amazing. This was an amazing thing for someone to tell us. We had been running away from home for 200 years. So now when I look at the world, I can see that the situation of most people in the world is so similar to the situation that we endured when we were so frightened. When very horrible, arrogant, mean-spirited white men were in office. And you know, when I look at those people now, in fact, they were on the front page of the New York Times, I think yesterday. And I just looked at them and I thought, well, you know, these are the people I've known my whole life. And now it is for the rest of the world to see them as I have known them. And I think further that if that is the only clarity that we get out of this time, it is still worth something. It is very important to know what your country really is. It's been so extraordinary growing up in a fascist country and to hear almost everyone, even immigrants who come, you know, I mean, I have been here, my people have been here over 200 years, and then people who come and they tell us that we live in a democracy and that they actually came here because we're free. Now, can you imagine the irony? So now we get to see just how free we are and what happens when all the goodies start to dwindle and the people who really feel that they should have the lion's share of everything, when they see that it's getting down to be a little bit in their estimation, what is happening? We get to see that there is not this great love, there is not this great cherishing of America, of the great dream of America, that we were told. And all of this is actually helpful. I'm not telling you this to bring you any despair, because it is really good to lose our illusions and to see the reality. And the reality of the country is very much different from my perspective as a person of color and as a woman of color. And I offer it to you as a guide, because in fact, I think what we need to realize is that even though our people, my people, Native American people, black people, suffered a great deal. At the same time, we learned how to have joy. And this is something that any struggle has to have. And in fact, what our struggle needs to revive, and I quote Gus Newport on this, I heard him speak last week in Berkeley with Cynthia McKinney, great Georgia woman. And he was saying, yes, she is amazing. But I heard him say that it is really important that we bring that into the movement, our songs, our poetry, and our dance. Because if we leave off our poetry, our song, and our dance, we will become joyless people. And then what is to be done? Nobody that I know wants to live in a boring society. So I don't know if you remember during the anti-apartheid era how every time the black South Africans won anything, I mean, it could be some tiny little thing that they won, and they had a little dance. They called it the toy toy. And they would just start doing that toy toy. And it was in that movement of the body, that remembrance of the body and of the spirit, it was in that movement that we feel our connection to the Creator and to creation. And we must bring that in and keep that in and keep it very alive. During this really horrible, scary, crazy time, I think this is the time that we must dance more than we have ever danced in our lives. So when I lived in Mississippi, I lived there during a time when it was illegal for black people and white people to get married. And so I married my husband and waited to see what they would do about it. And this is also the attitude that we have to have. If they are going to make horrible laws, we must defy horrible laws. We must do it in our own self-interest, because we are here not by some accident. We are here for a reason. And part of our reason is to celebrate this wonder that we are in. We are in a wonder. We live in a wonder. This whole world is incredible. And we must not let people take away our sense of that. And every day we must affirm it. And one way to affirm that we love our own existence is to refuse to have it changed by people who don't respect it. We must delve very deeply into our wellsprings of creativity. I mean, if you have never sewn anything and you think you don't know one end of the needle from the other, now is the time for you to learn. If you think you can paint, but you're afraid to start, now is the time to do it. Creativity is given to us in times like this. But this is a horrible time. This is a time when the dogs of war are all over the planet. They are just everywhere. All the news in terms of war is just dreadful. And it gets into our psyche, and it gets into our hearts, and it makes us fearful. And fear is not the way to go. So get out the needle, get out the thread, get out the paint, get out the dancing, get out the talking to each other, get out the drum. I just started learning to drum. So get out the drum. Get out the xylophone. Get out the piano. You know, get out everything you have that can make a sound. Learn to sing. You really should have to learn. It's natural. But I know how it is. So start singing. This is the time to do all of those things. This is not a time to sit in the corner and be quiet. It is not. So in Mississippi, I learned that the only way to be free is just to be free. I mean, it's not how, it's not when, it's not if. If you're going to be free, the only way to be free is to be free. So just be free. I remember one of the things that kept drove me insane in Mississippi. I was there for 7 years, and I saw, you know, as an adult, the fascism that I had endured as a child, as my parents had endured. And what kept me sane partly was planting things. So this is something else that I urge you to do. Just plant crazily, you know.
Woo!
Just drop seeds in the sidewalk. You know, find tracks and drop seeds. Go into the woods and drop seeds, because they're actually trying to, you know, keep the seeds from reproducing, because they'd like to starve us out. They don't like to keep us enslaved in that way. But we must refuse, and you can refuse. You can take the seeds and spread them all over, wherever you go. Just take a pocket full of seeds and just put them everywhere. The earth is perfectly willing to be our ally in resistance. One of my allies and one of my guides was my mother, who was a green goddess. My mother could grow anything. My mother could keep anything green. My mother was a wonderful force for good on the earth. And I've just discovered recently, in a very amusing way, this following thing, which is I go to a Tibetan doctor who gives me these little very bitter pills. And she said to me one day, she said, you know, in addition to these pills, what you need is a green Tara. And so a friend, unbeknown to me, had already bought me a green Tara 3 years before. And so I sit sometimes looking at this green Tara, and I see my mother. I see that the goddesses of earth are the goddesses of the heavens. It is all one thing. It's all one thing. The person and the spirit that is encouraging us to blossom, that is encouraging us to move forward, is one. So Tara and my mother are healing for me, just in the thinking of them. And that brings me to the book that most of you know, and if you don't know the book, you know the movie. After many, many books, after 10 books, I wrote The Color Purple. And thank you. And these people in The Color Purple, some people think that they're actually my ancestors. They are, in a way. But basically what I was doing in that book is trying to show how my ancestors and people like my ancestors, who have been brought up under patriarchy and, in their case, under slavery, and therefore treated each other terribly, I was trying to show how they don't have to do that and they did not have to do that. And the reason I took the time to do that in that way is because we live in a time when it's not only important to heal ourselves and to try to keep our children healthy, but it is very, very, very necessary to heal our ancestors. And one of the ways that we do that, especially if we are artists, is to look at their lives and reimagine them. This is very, very good high medicine. To reimagine the ancestors and how they might have changed and how they might have done things differently. Our tendency, many of us, is to be forgetful of ancestors, fearful of ancestors, have no sense of how we are connected to ancestors. This is not a time to have any of that. This is a time to feel our connection to the ancestors very strongly, because we sometimes need to ask their help. And I'm going to tell you, unless you heal them, they cannot help you, because they're still in a mess and they can't get out. And the way they get out and the way they transform is only through you. So this is the work that you have to do in order to move forward. About 2 or 3 weeks ago, we were showing a film called Hokokumikaki. It's a Hawaiian film made by a wonderful Hawaiian filmmaker, Liliana Alibi Meyer. And she does this thing that is exactly what I'm talking about. She has filmed a ceremony in Hawaii, which shows the people of Hawaii, the Hawaiian Hawaiians. It shows them going back to a crucial point in their history when their elders made a very bad decision. as they reenact this very bad decision, which had to do with turning them against each other, which made it very easy for the colonizers to come in and take over. And the people, the Hawaiian people, have re-imaged that moment when this horrible decision was made. And they have made an enactment of what it was like to change that moment. So that instead of the people coming together to kill each other, they come together to embrace. And this is the kind of psychic work that we must do today. Because our ancestors, they're not gone, you know. They don't really go anywhere. I mean, they die in the body, but they stay with us much more fiercely than you would believe. And that is why sometimes you will see in your own family behavior that you cannot explain. So that is what I would like to urge everyone to do. This is one way. We can help ancestors and others to envision a better world. Now, one of the things about having a better world is that it has to be a better world for everyone. And if unless it is a better world for everyone, unless it is a better world for everyone, it will never work. And so we must really always think like that. I'm a little worried because sometimes I think the programming, and it really is programming, of racism has been so, you know, it has taken hold so well that people honestly, especially if they're white, find it really difficult to think that the other people in the world really want, you know, the same things that they do. And this is a mindset that has to be changed. If it is not changed, nothing will change. You will be able to live in little enclaves, you know, like the Bay Area, and talk about, you know, a better world is possible. Well, actually, when you live in the Bay Area, you already live in probably the best world. But we have to think of all the people in the world who don't have drinking water, who don't have food. You know, I just saw a film about the lost boys of Sudan. And their parents were killed in the Sudan. And then the children walked all the way to Ethiopia looking for, you know, shelter. The Ethiopian army chased them out into Kenya. They were in refugee camps. And eventually, these children walked to Seattle. Now, this is an amazing story. But it should help us realize, you know, just how enormous our job is. It's not just to make this a better world in Berkeley. It's not just to make it a better world in San Francisco. I like our world. It's really, really wonderful. But this is not the world that most of the poor children on Earth have. I mean, there are thousands, I think 11,000 children in Colombia, for instance, where we spend so much of our tax money. There are 11,000 of those children who sleep outdoors, who sleep on the streets. So it has to be a better world for all of us, and we have to keep thinking of it that way. We have to really work to undo the programming. And I want to just share with you this little thing about programming. All of you in this room, I'm sure, refer to each other and to women and girls as guys. I know you do. Because you've been programmed to do that. But I have to say that if you think about that for 5 minutes, you will understand that we will not get very far if we continue to deny the feminine, and if we continue to call women and girls guys, and if we find it, when we try to change, watch what happens when you try to change this. I really want you to watch your mind as you try to change this. You will probably not be able to do it. And that is a very good indication of the programming that we are subjected to. Because really, after 3 decades of feminism, the emergence of the appreciation of the goddess, you know, the discovery of our matriarchal heritage, you know, all of this knowledge that we have about the feminine and about ourselves, believe me, we were not supposed to be calling each other guys. So, in
urge us all to treasure and to honor and to search out allies.
They can be dead, they can be living, they can be in another country, but find them, because we need to have allies. We need to have allies across color lines, age lines, and try to really genuinely follow where your heart tells you you have to go to be with an ally. Now, when I was writing Possessing the Secret of Joy, this was the beginning of the struggle to understand and illuminate the danger to human beings, to all of us really, but especially to our sisters in Africa, Malaysia, in the Middle East, the dangers of female genital mutilation. And one of the things that I found, I had heard about this when I was in my 20s, I had gone to Kenya to help build a school. And they were talking about this female genital mutilation. I had no idea what there was to mutilate. So over the next 2 decades, I studied this. I studied it really hard. I saw that people were really holding on to it, that they really had reasons, they felt, to hold on to this horrible practice, which was killing the children, damaging the women, making childbirth a hell, and making the sexual relationships between men and women just awful. And when I got to Africa, nobody wanted to talk about it. So I knew, and not only that, it was a strong taboo, and people were killed for talking about it. So I knew that in order to write a story about that, about female genital mutilation, I needed a strong ally. And the strong ally that I found was Carl Jung. And Carl Jung, you know, had died many years ago, but through the miracle of writing, he had done all this wonderful work of his. And so I studied it, and I tried to understand the mind of people so that I could bring forth this awful tale. And one of the really wonderful events that happened in claiming this ally was that I went all the way to Göttingen, this little place that Carl Jung had from Lake Zurich. Excuse me, in Switzerland. And the story of that is that I was in Amsterdam promoting a book, and I had a day to go from Amsterdam to Zurich to get this sort of blessing from this ally. And I got to Zurich, and someone helped us get on the train. We went to this place. And all the time, the woman who was helping us said, you know, the gate to his house, the gate that surrounds Jung's house, is always locked. She said, I have been trying to get there for 2 years. Every time I go, it is locked. So I had come all the way from San Francisco, all the way from Amsterdam that morning. And I was on this train, and I knew that I really needed to go and stand where Jung had stood, because by then I felt we understood each other. And so when we got there, the train actually took us beyond where we were supposed to go, and we had to walk back to the town. And as we were sitting in this little town somewhere in Switzerland, a taxi came up, and I kid you not, it was gold colored. And in the taxi, there was a golden-haired person driving it. And he stopped, and he said, where do you want to go? And we said, Jung's place. And he took us to Jung's place. And when we got to Jung's place, we saw the gate was wide open. And I was still a little afraid because I did grow up in Georgia. And you don't really go into people's property unless they permit you. But he went ahead, and he knocked on the door. And he came back and got us. And so I was able to go and to conclude this piece that I needed to conclude in order to write about the mutilation of women and girls. And this is the power of the ally. And this is the power of going where you need to go, getting the medicine you need to take in order to be strong and to make the world a better world. Planning to
because I want to tell you another story about Cuba. I've been going to Cuba since 1978. And I love it as much as I love any country on the face of the earth, and I love the people. And every time they are endangered, I suffer, as we all suffer when we care about our neighbors. They are our neighbors. The thing about Cuba that I like so much is that they care about the same things that I do. I care about education. I care about health care. I care about people having decent food. I care about people having housing. I care about people having clothing. I care about people being able to really think, you know. I care about people being able to grow. These are things that the people in Cuba think about, the things that they care about. And this is why you know who doesn't want us to go there. Because what can we learn? We can learn that you can be really poor, as I was poor as a child, and you can still be just fine. Because you can put your mind and your heart together, and all of your hard work, and you can make sure that your children have books, you can be sure that your children have schools, you can be sure that your children have health care. Why can't we have that? That my ancestors have worked this land for about 400 years, and if we can't have that, if we cannot have that, how can anybody else have it? You tell me. So Cuba is a place that we must all continue to visit. We must take the risk to go and see how the people are doing. I think that all of you in this room must have such a greater awareness of what is actually happening in places like Cuba and the people, our families who live somewhere else. I have relatives who just can't imagine every time I go to Cuba that I'm going to survive. You know, I remember once going to Jamaica. And my daughter was on a motorcycle and she broke her foot. She had a motorcycle accident and broke her foot. And on the entire side of the island of Jamaica where we were, there was not a single doctor. And yet every time we mentioned Cuba, where there was a doctor in every apartment building, the people of Jamaica just said, oh no, that's a terrible place. Those people are just slaves. So I would like us to really think about, you know, what is going on in all the places in the world that we love. We have to keep our eyes on those places. So that brings me to the poetry that I was going to read. And the feeling that after almost 40 years of writing, that it was time to give it up, I probably had enough, and I tried that. And one day, as I was sitting in my house, the news, it was not amused that my decision came and slapped me on the wrist and said, my dear, you do not get to decide this. After which I wrote 5 new books. One of them is absolute trust in the goodness of the earth. And the other one, the story about the other one is that I finished writing the book Absolute Trust in the Goodness of the Earth, poetry. And my publisher sent me little sheets on which to write my name, because you know how you are when you want to book with an autograph and make a line, and it's hard to remember that the writer's arm sometimes is really not up to it, to signing hundreds and hundreds of books. So I had these sheets sent to me. They sent them to me so I could do it at home. So I was sitting there trying to sign my name, which is just totally illegible. It's just a scrawl. And I was so bored. Thank you. She said 5 minutes. I was so bored writing my own name that I started to draw. And I started to draw these little pictures. And I would draw pictures, and I would write poems, but I just couldn't bear just writing just my name. If you try that, I mean, if you write your name for a million times, you really get tired of it. So I finally decided that I would try to put that into a book of its own. And so that is how this little book came to be. And I'm going to read you, as I finish, the last poem in that little book. And this is how it goes. Turn to the wind for help. Ask it to drop all radioactive particles while embracing you. There is a swift horse whose name is Night. Ride it into dreams. We must dream our way out of this. Strive to remember it is not normal to live in terror of the water in your glass. Friendship is antidote to poison. Do not be like cows, grazing, watching the butcher. If we are true to her, if we are true to her, the goddess will come to us. She will seem odd. Thank you.